Thanks, I say, partly to Breslin and partly to my partner, Captain Eagle Eye. He makes an apology face back. First impressions and all that jazz. If we're ready now, let's rock and roll. Breslin holds the door open for me to leave the observation room first, so I can't get a last word with Steve behind his back. Not that we need to swap meaningful whispers, but still. The corridor should fold around me like home, scuffed sludge green paint and worn carpet and all. Should feel like my marked track through my own territory, leading me straight and safe to the enemy neatly arranged in my interview room crosshairs. Instead, it feels like an unflagged trail through no man's land, pocked with ankle-breaking mud holes and booby-trapped all the way. Chapter 4. Everyone has an interview shtick. One guy on the squad does a beautiful line in Father Confessor, piling on the guilt and waving absolution like a doggy treat. Another one does narky headmaster, staring over his glasses and snapping out questions. I do warrior woman, ready to rush out with her guns blazing and avenge all your wrongs, if you'll just tell her what they are. And her flip side, stroppy, man-hating bitch, when we want to piss off a rapist or a Neanderthal. I also do cool girl, who's one of the lads and stands around and has a laugh, who guys can talk to when they wouldn't feel comfortable talking to another fella. Steve does nice boy next door and variations. With women, Breslin does gallant gentleman, taking their coats and bending his head to listen to every word. With guys, he does chief jock, your best pal, but you better stay on his good side, or he'll flush your head down the jacks. We size up the target and wheel out the one that we think has the best chance. Rory doesn't need warrior woman, at least as far as we know, and stroppy man-hating bitch will probably scare him under the table. But cool girl should relax him a notch or two. It sounds like he'd get on great with nice boy next door, but that's out for now. I just hope Chief Jock doesn't intimidate him enough or piss me off enough to send this whole thing off the rails. Rory starts off our relationship by costing me a tenner. He doesn't cry. He jumps a mile when Breslin throws the door open. But when I give him my cool girl nod and grin, he comes up with some kind of smile back. Hell yeah, I say, throwing myself into a chair opposite him and pulling out my notebook. I'm Detective Conway, and that's Detective Breslin. Thanks for coming in. No problem. Rory tries to work out whether we're going to shake hands or not. I'm Rory Fallon is... Morning, Breslin says, heading over to the video recorder. You okay to talk? Not too hungover? I know how it goes, young guy like you, Sunday morning. I'm fine. Rory's voice cracks on the word. He clears his throat. Breslin grins, hitting buttons. Disgraceful. You'll have to do better next weekend. I nod at his half-drunk cup of tea. Can I get you a reheat on that, or a coffee, maybe? No, thanks, I'm fine. Rory barely has the edge of his arse on the seat. He looks ready to leg it at the first loud noise, if there was anywhere to leg it to. What's this about? Aha, Breslin says, turning from the video to point a finger at him. Hang on there, man. We can't get down to business yet. These days we have to get any conversation on tape and video for everyone's protection, you know what I mean? After a second, Rory nods uncertainly. Yeah, I guess. Course you do, Breslin says cheerfully. Just give me a minute and we can chat away to our heart's content. He goes back to messing with the recorder, whistling softly between his teeth. Rory's shoulders are up around his ears, He says, "Do I need a lawyer or something?" "I don't know," I say, lowering my notebook to give him my full attention. "Do you?" I mean, shouldn't I have one? I raise my eyebrows. "Any reason why?" "No, I don't have anything to... Am I not supposed to have one?" "You can have one if you want, man," Breslin tells him. "Absolutely. Pick a solicitor, give him a ring. We'll all wait around till he can join us. Not a problem. I can tell you exactly what he'll do, though. He'll sit next to you. Every now and then he'll say, 'You don't have to answer that question,' and he'll charge you by the minute for it. I can tell you the same thing for free. You don't have to answer any of our questions. And we tell everyone first thing. You're not obliged to say anything unless you wish to do so, but anything you do say will be taken down in writing and may be given in evidence. Clear enough? Or would you be happier paying for it?" "No, I mean, yeah, I guess I'm okay without a solicitor." And that's the caution out of the way. "You are, of course," Breslin says, giving the video recorder a pat. "Oakley doakley, that's working." Detectives Conway and Breslin interviewing Mr. Rory Fallon. "Let's talk." Rory says, just like Lucy did, "Is this about Aisling?"
"Hey, whoa there, Rory," Breslin says, lifting his hands and laughing. I grin along. "Slow down, will you? We'll get there, I promise. But me and Detective Conway, we're going to be doing hundreds of these interviews, so we need to stick to asking the same questions in the same order, or we'll get mixed up and forget what we've already asked who. So do us a favour, let us do this our way, okay?"
"Okay, sorry." But Rory's shoulders have dropped, what with him being just one of hundreds, and what with us being just a couple of dumb goons on the verge of losing our place in our script. Breslin is good. I've watched him work before, but I've never shared an interview room with him, and in spite of myself, I'm not hating it. "No problem," I say easily. Breslin drops into the chair next to mine, and we get comfortable, flipping notebook pages, settling our arses into the quirks of our chairs, checking that our pens work. "So," I say, "let's start at the beginning. What you do yesterday, from like noon onwards?" Rory takes a deep breath and pushes his glasses up his nose. "Right, at noon I was in the shop. I own the Wayward Bookshop in Ranelagh, right below my flat where you, well, your colleagues came and got me. Been past it 100 times, kept meaning to go in," I say. "I'll have to do it now, or you'll be filing complaints about me." Me and Breslin have a little chuckle about that. Rory smiles automatically. A good boy, giving us what we expect from him. "So, how was business yesterday?"
"Pretty good. Saturdays I get a lot of regulars. Mums and dads bringing the kids in to pick out a book mostly. We've got a good children's section. I'm not..." He's blinking away anxiously. "I'll bring the nephews in to you," I say.
"I don't have nephews."
"You can recommend them something with dinosaurs. How's business overall?"
"It's all right. I mean..." Rory does a twisty shrug. "Bookshops are all having a hard time these days. At least we've got regulars." Meaning Rory is under pressure. We'll check what "all right" means to him.
"I'll definitely have to bring the nephews in to support you, so," I say, smiling. "What time did you finish up?"
"I close at 6.
"And what did you do then?"
"I went back up to my flat and had a shower. Rory is turning a cute shade of pink. "I was going over to a girl's house for dinner. A woman's house."
"Oh, yeah," says Breslin, tilting his chair back and grinning. My man Rory's a player. Tell your Uncle Don the whole story. Girlfriend. Friend with benefits. True love. She's... The pink gets deeper. Rory swipes his palms across his cheeks like he can wipe it away. Well, I don't know if I'd call her my girlfriend exactly. We've only been on a few dates. But yes, I'm hoping it'll go somewhere. Present tense. Not that that means much. He's not a fool. I smile at all the adorable young love. Rory manages a smile back. So, you made a bit of an effort, Breslin says. Right. Tell me you made a bit of an effort, Rory. That sure's fine for selling the Gruffalo to soccer moms. But if you want to impress your way into a babe's, well, into her good books, let's put it that way, it's not going to do the job. What did you wear? Just a shirt and a pullover and trousers. I mean, they were decent ones. They weren't... Skeptical look off Breslin. What colour? What kind? A white linen shirt and a light blue pullover and dark blue trousers. I'm normally a jeans guy, but Aisling's... I knew she'd be wearing something a bit fancier, so I thought I should too. Sounds like it could have been a lot worse. You've got decent taste when you try, my son. Breslin nods at the overcoat on the back of Rory's chair. That coat. Rory glances uncertainly back and forth between it and Breslin. Yes, I don't really have a proper winter coat. I got it at Arnott's. It's not just some... I mean, it's okay, right? Not bad, Breslin says, squinting critically at the coat. I'll do. You didn't wear those gloves with it, though, did you? You didn't. Rory's head whips around to the gloves. Yeah, I did. Why? What's wrong with them? Yeesh, Breslin says, grimacing. He reaches across the table and pokes the gloves with his pen, flips them over. They look clean. Maybe I'm getting old. Maybe nowadays all the cool kids go on dates looking like they borrowed their hands off a mountain biker. You really wore these? It was cold. So, you've got to suffer for style, Rory. You don't have a black pair? At least those wouldn't have stuck out like a couple of sore thumbs. I looked. I thought I had black leather ones somewhere, but I don't know where they've gone. These were the only ones I could find. We'll look too. Quit hassling the poor guy, I tell Breslin. You take the gloves off as soon as you're in the door anyway. Am I right, Rory? Who cares what they look like? Breslin rolls his eyes and sits back, shaking his head. Rory throws me a quick, grateful glance. We're turning the interview room into familiar ground. Even Breslin's slaggings are the type Rory has to have taken in school on a regular basis. And that's settling him. He's not a helpless little weenie, the way I thought from all that fidgeting and dithering at the start. It's more complicated than that. Inside his comfort zone, Rory does fine. Take him outside it, and he stops coping. I'm normally a jeans guy. Aisling wasn't his comfort zone. I say, so where does Aisling live? Stony Batter. Convenient, I say, nodding. Just a quick hop across the river, and you're there. How'd you get there? Bus. I walked down to Moorhampton Road. It wasn't raining yet, and I caught the 39A up to Stony Batter. It stops practically around the corner from her house. Whoa, 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 rewind! Breslin's eyebrows are up. Bus? You took the bus to her place? Way to impress a lady, Rory. Do you not own a car? No? Rory's going all pink and flustered again. I love blushers. No, I do, yeah. Just, I was thinking, I mean, if we had wine with dinner and if I needed to get home.
You do? What kind of car?
It's a Toyota Yaris. Breslin snorted.
Yeah? What year?
2007.
Jesus.
Breslin says, grinning into his notebook.
Now I see why you took the bus. Carry on.
Rory ducks his head and pokes his glasses up his nose. Apparently he's the type who takes wedgies meekly. When those guys finally snap, they do it right. I ask, what time did you leave home? Rory instantly sits up straighter. He's so glad to hear me doing the talking instead of Breslin. He'd tell me anything. 6:45. Which is the most interesting thing he said so far. His appointment with Aisling was for 8. It doesn't take 1.25 hours to get from Ranelagh to Stonybatter. Especially not on a Saturday evening. He could have walked in half the time. And when did you get the bus? I ask.
Just before 7.
One got there as soon as I reached the stop. We can check that. CCTV on the bus. I write it down. What time were you due at Aisling's place?
8, but I didn't want to be late. If I was early, I could always just walk around for a while.
Brr, I say, making a face. In that weather?
Doing what?
Rory shifts his feet like he can't get them comfortable. Talking about that extra time is turning him jumpy. I would only love to stamp Rory innocent and chase off after Steve's gangster, but I can smell it. Hot as blood. There's something here. He says,
I don't know, just making sure I could find the house, that kind of thing.
I look puzzled. But you said her place was practically around the corner from the bus stop.
That sounds like you already knew your way around.
Rory's blinking hard.
What? No, not like that. But Aisling had given me directions and I'd looked up the map on my phone. It wasn't complicated. I just wanted to allow a little extra time, just in case.
I leave a sceptical pause. But he doesn't jump into it.
Okay, I say. So, you got off the 39A in Stonybatter.
What time?
A little before 7:30. There wasn't much traffic.
In plenty of time to reach Aisling's house, kill her, and be back outside the door knocking and looking confused by 8:00. It even makes sense of turning off the cooker. Rory didn't want the fire alarm going off before he had time to act out his little play with the calls and the texts, and presumably the worried pacing. For anyone who might be watching. That hot smell fills up my nose. I glance over at the one-way glass, which stares blankly back. One look at Steve would have told me if his mind was matching mine. Instead, I have Breslin, who's rocking his chair on its back legs and doodling in his notebook. I think about kicking the chair out from under him.
You are well early, I say.
What you do? Rory says, I walked round to the top of Viking Gardens, that's Aisling's Road, to make sure I had the directions right, like I said.
See anyone on Viking Gardens?
No, the street was empty. I didn't hang around there, though. I didn't want anyone thinking I was a burglar or a stalker.
Another jab at his glasses.
Did you go into the road?
Find Aisling's house.
No, it's a straight road, a cul-de-sac. I could see the whole thing from the top. I didn't need to find the house in advance. And I wasn't keen on the idea of Aisling looking out our window and seeing me there 30 minutes early. She would have had to invite me in. And she wouldn't have been ready and overall, it would have been really awkward.
He's edgy as hell. But the answers are coming easily. No stumbling or backtracking.
That doesn't mean much, though. Not with this guy. He's already told us he's the type who thinks ahead.
goes through every hypothetical, makes sure he's got everything in place so his plans will run smoothly. If he planned a murder, he'd have his alibi story down pat. Probably he'd do a walkthrough a couple of days in advance. And if he didn't plan it, he would be well able to spend the night coming up with a good story and running through it a few hundred times. This guy's real comfort zone is inside his head.
Plus, she would have thought you were some obsessive freak who spent his spare time staring at her windows,
Breslin points out. Rory flinches.
That's never a good look. What'd you do instead?
I was going to just wander around till 8 o'clock, but then I realised I hadn't brought anything with me.
What? You mean condoms?
Breslin breaks into a big grin.
Now there's self-confidence.
Rory's head shoots down and he starts jabbing at his glasses again.
No, I mean flowers. I didn't want to show up empty-handed.
Aisling had said not to bother bringing wine, but I'd been planning to buy her flowers in Ranelagh, except I forgot. I was concentrating so hard on what to wear and getting it ironed right and what time to leave. I only realised when I got to her road.
Awkward, Breslin says, sing-song.
He's tilting his chair back again and playing with his pen. Well, yes, for a second there I was panicking, but there's a Tesco up on Prussia Street, so...
Hang on, I say, confused.
I thought you didn't know the area.
I don't. I... What?
How'd you know where the Tesco is? Rory blinks at me.
I looked it up on my phone, so I headed up there.
I know before Breslin opens his mouth that he's going to come in. We're working well together. Me keeping things chilled so we can get the basic info. Him leaning in whenever he gets an opening to poke Rory with sticks. Me standing under the piñata, ready to catch whatever sweeties come tumbling out. I don't like working well with Breslin. It feels like he's suckering me all over again, in ways I can't pin down.
Tesco flowers? He asks.
His face is halfway between a grin and a cringe.
I thought you said this Aisling's the fancy type.
Rory shifts his arse on the chair.
I did, she is, but at that hour... She's the fancy type. She's been slaving over a hot cooker all day for you, and you're going to show up with a bunch of half-dead shocking pink daisies. Come on.
Well, no, it wasn't what I planned. I wanted... Aisling told me that when she was little, her father used to take her to Powers Court, and they'd walk around the Japanese garden together, looking at the azaleas, and he'd tell her stories about a brave princess called Aisling. So I wanted to see if I could find her an azalea plant. I thought a tiny rueful smile down at his hands. I thought it would make her happy.
Now that's nice, I say, nodding.
Really nice. I'd say she'd have loved that.
Now that,
Breslin says approvingly, pointing his pen at Rory.
That's bringing your A-game. That's the kind of thing that gets a guy places, if you know what I mean. That might even have made up for those.
The gloves.
Shame you screwed it up. I'm betting Tesco doesn't stock azaleas.
I know it doesn't, but at that hour on a Saturday evening, nowhere else is going to be open. I thought even a bunch of ugly flowers was better than nothing. Rory glances anxiously between the two of us, looking for approval. Breslin grimaces and wavers one hand.
Depends on the girl. If she's the damn market type, sure. But with this one, never mind. Too late now.
So, you headed up to Tesco?
Yes.
They didn't have a lot of flowers left. And most of them were what you said. Big daisies dyed strange colours. But I found a bunch of irises that were okay.
Nothing wrong with irises,
I say. What time did you get to the Tesco?
About 7:45, maybe just after.
And we can check that too. CCTV on the bus, CCTV in the Tesco. The whole timeline Rory's laying out is verifiable. And I wonder if that's deliberate. Those forgotten flowers were very convenient. The Tesco is 7 or 8 minutes walk from Viking Gardens. Just enough to account nice and neatly for that extra half hour. If Rory rushed there or back, and we need to go looking for someone who saw him rushing, he could have shaved a couple of minutes off that walk. The actual murder took almost no time. 2 seconds for the punch, maybe 10 or 20 to check Aisling's breathing and her pulse. 10 to turn off the cooker. Gone inside a minute. It's the build-up to the murder that could have taken time, if there was a build-up. If Rory is our boy, he's no routine rock-bottom stupid wimp. He's nervous, but he's covering every crack before we can reach it. One step ahead all the way. If we're stuck with him, then at least we're going to get a fight.
Cutting it a bit fine, I say.
How long were you there?
Only a couple of minutes. I hurried, like you said. I didn't have a lot of time left. Things like this are why I like being early.
Fair enough, I say.
So when you left Tesco? I went back to Viking Gardens. I got there in time. I checked my watch. It was just before 8.
Was there anyone on the road?
Rory thinks, rubbing at his nose. There was an old man walking his dog, a smallish white dog. He was heading out of Viking Gardens. He nodded to me. I don't think there was anyone else.
Easy to check again.
So, then what?
I went down the road looking at the house numbers till I found Aisling's house. It's number 26. I rang the bell. He trails off. I say, and? She didn't answer the door. This time the blush comes up hot and fast. I can feel Steve behind the glass swaying towards that blush. Positive that it means he was right and Rory Fallon is a holy innocent. I'm not so sure. That blush could be the memory of humiliation. Or it could be the lie showing.
Huh? I say.
Weird. What did you think was going on?
Rory's head is going down.
At that stage, I just thought Aisling hadn't heard me. I knew the bell was working. I could hear it going off inside the house, but I thought maybe she was in the toilet or she'd gone out the back for some reason.
So, what did you do?
I waited a minute and then knocked. Then I rang the bell again and she still didn't answer. So after a few more minutes, I texted her. I was wondering if I had the address wrong. I waited for ages, but she didn't text me back.
Ooh, Breslin says, wincing. That's got a sting.
I thought maybe she hadn't heard the text alert. Rory catches the mix of pity and amusement on Breslin's face and ducks his head back down.
It could happen. She could have been cooking or something and left her phone in another room.
Those text alerts can be awfully quiet.
I'm always missing mine, I agree. Pain in the hole.
So, did you try her again?
I rang her. The house is only a little cottage, one story, so I thought she'd definitely hear the ring, no matter where she was. But she didn't answer.
Rory glances up, catches Breslin's dry grin and winces.
I tried one more time. This time I put my ear to the door to see if I could hear the phone ringing inside. I was wondering if she was even there or if... Well, I couldn't hear anything.
We'll check that.
I say, what did you figure the story was?
I wasn't sure. I thought probably...
Rory's voice has almost vanished.
Speak up, Breslin says. The camera needs to hear this.
Rory manages a little more volume
but he's still having trouble looking at us. Well, Aisling cancelled the date at the last minute a couple of weeks ago. She never said why, just that something had come up. And it was pretty complicated trying to schedule our other dates as well. I'd suggest a day and it wouldn't work for her. Or it would have forced and then there was a problem. And sometimes she doesn't answer her phone. I don't know whether it's some mind game that really, really doesn't seem like something Aisling would do. But obviously I don't know her that well yet. Or whether there's something in her life that she's not ready to tell me about. Like a parent with dementia or alcoholism who sometimes needs looking after at short notice. No mention of two-timing, although the possibility has to have occurred to him. Maybe he's just dodging the slagging from Breslin. But it's an interesting one to leave out. So I thought this was probably more of the same, whatever that was. And you, standing there with your lovely Tesco irises, Breslin says, almost keeping back a smirk. All ready for action. Rory's head goes down farther. I say, nice and sympathetic. Were you worried that something had happened to Aisling? Rory turns to me gravely. Yes, I was a bit. That's why I asked when you came in whether this was about her. I was afraid she might have fainted or slipped in the shower, or she might be too sick even to pick up her phone. I mean, that might have been the thing she wasn't ready to tell me about. Some illness, epilepsy or... But I didn't know what to do about it. I couldn't ring 999 and tell them the emergency was that a woman wasn't answering her door to a guy she'd only known a few weeks. They'd have laughed in my face and told me it sounded like I needed a new girlfriend. Even I knew that was the most likely scenario. But I couldn't help imagining all the possibilities. I do that, even when it's not. Is Aisling okay? He was out of his comfort zone, and he turned into a useless, dithery little spa. Or he wants us to think he did. I say, so, what did you do? There was a crack between the curtains, and I could see light inside, so I tried to look through the crack. I was a bit worried that the neighbours would see me and call the police. But I did have texts from Aisling inviting me over, and I thought maybe the police coming wouldn't be such a bad idea, because then at least they could check and make sure nothing was up. This guy couldn't order a sandwich without tying himself in knots about the possible consequences of mayonnaise. What did you see? Rory shakes his head. Nothing. It was only a narrow crack. And the angle meant that all I could see was a bit of sofa and a lamp. The lamp was on. I didn't want to stay there too long. I just had a quick look. Did you see any movement? Shadows? Any indication that there was someone home? No. Nothing like that. The shadows were flickering a bit, but not really like someone was moving around. More like there was a fire in the fireplace. Which there was. I make a note to check whether you can see the flicker through the curtains. If Rory's our guy, he's got good self-control. A lot of people wouldn't have been able to resist the temptation to give us a mysterious intruder. So, what did you do? I texted her one more time, just in case we had got our wires crossed on the day or... Breslin snorts. Rory flinches. I said, just in case. I realise most likely I've been dumped. I already said I realised that. But if it was all some misunderstanding and I went off in a huff and deleted her number off my phone, then we could both be missing out on something amazing. I didn't want to take that risk. I'd rather make an idiot of myself.
Looks like you got your wish. Breslin says. You should have walked when she didn't answer the door.
If she wants to fix the situation, let her do the work. Treat him mean. Keep him keen. I don't do that stuff.
No.
How's that working out for you?
I say, he's a decent human being, Breslin. That's actually a good thing.
Rory, when she didn't answer that text, what'd you do?
Rory says quietly, I gave up. It was gone 8:30. I was freezing. It was starting to rain. And whatever was going on, it wasn't going to make any difference if I stood there all night. So I left.
You must have been well pissed off, Breslin says.
Here's you, hauling your arse halfway across the city on a shitty winter night, legging it up to Tesco and back, and she can't even be bothered letting you in. I'd be fuming.
I wasn't. I was more just upset. I mean, I was a bit annoyed as well, but
of course you were. Did you do any banging on the door? Any yelling? Swearing? Kicking lampposts?
And as Rory opens his mouth,
remember, we'll be checking with the neighbours.
No, I didn't do anything like that.
Rory has his face turned away, like not kicking Aisling's door in makes him less of a man.
I just went home.
Fair play, I say. Some guys would have made tits of themselves in front of our whole road.
Not the way to impress a girl. Did you catch the bus again?
I walked. I didn't feel like waiting for the bus or having to see people. I walked.
Meaning no bus driver or passengers who could tell us if he was acting stunned or shaky or if there was blood all over his gloves. I pull my eyebrows into a concerned shape.
Jesus, I wouldn't fancy that walk.
Right through town on a Saturday night. Drunky, just looking for trouble.
No one gave you a hassle?
Rory's shoulders twitch in some kind of shrug. He's trying to vanish into his chest again. I probably wouldn't even have noticed if they tried. Some guy roared something right behind me on Ainger Street, but I don't know what it was. I don't think it was in English, and I'm not sure he was talking to me. I was just...
the twitch again.
I wasn't really paying attention.
Doesn't sound like you missed much, I say.
What you do with the flowers?
I threw them away.
All of a sudden, the evening surges up in Rory's voice, turns it defeated and raw and horribly sad. Losing Aisling has hit him hard in one way or another. At first, I forgot I even had them. And when I realised, I just wanted to get rid of them. I thought I should find someone to give them to instead of wasting them. But I didn't have the energy. I shoved them in a bin. After all that.
A bin? Where?
On the quays.
Yeah.
I walked all that way basically wearing a sign that said dumped before I remembered the flares existed.
Hilarious, right?
That's to Breslin.
I would have done the same, I say.
I flick an eyebrow at the one-way glass. Steve needs to send a couple of floaters to go through the bins on the quays before they get emptied. There could be blood on that shitty bouquet.
Only I would probably have stopped for a pint on my way home.
You didn't, no?
No. I just wanted to get home.
Rory rubs his hands down his face. The strain is starting to get to him.
Can you tell me what's going on?
I ask.
And you got home when?
I'm not sure. A bit before 9:30, maybe. I didn't look at my watch.
Breslin says. Who'd you ring?
What do you mean?
When you got in, who'd you ring to bitch about your big date going shite? Your best mate? Your brother?
No one.
Breslin stares. You're not serious. Ah, Rory. Tell me you had someone you could ring. Because plenty of people get the old heave-ho somewhere along the way. It happens. But if you genuinely got home from a night like that, and you couldn't think of a single bloke to ring for a good bitching session about women and the world,
Well, that's just the saddest thing I've heard in weeks. Months.
Rory says, I didn't ring anyone. I made myself a sandwich because for obvious reasons I hadn't had any dinner. And I sat in my flat looking out my window and feeling like the world's biggest fool. And imagining more and more ridiculous ways that everything might still be all right. And wishing I were the kind of person who could deal with this by going out and getting drunk off my face and getting into a fight or shagging some stranger.
The savage humiliation in his voice bites at the air.
It tastes good. If we get to him, it'll be through that. Humiliation. If Aisling got to him, it was the same way. Finding out she was shagging someone else would probably have done the job.
And at midnight, when Aisling still hadn't rung me or texted me, I went to bed. The last thing I wanted in the world was to ring up one of my mates and tell him this story, okay?
Breslin keeps up the incredulous stare for another minute. Rory looks away and pulls at his shirt cuff, but he keeps his mouth shut. So far, Rory's been all about a nice checkable story. And he has to know we can check phone records. If he talked to anyone, it was in a way he figures we can't trace. I wonder if any of his mates live near his route home. I leave it.
Just so there's no confusion, I say, can you confirm that this is the woman you are seeing? The woman whose house you went to last night?
I pull a photo of Aisling out of my file and slide it across the table to Rory. He glances up, wide-eyed, forgetting all about the flash of bitterness.
Why'd you have? You already did something? What?
Like Detective Breslin said, I tell him nice but firm. We need to do this in order. Is this the woman whose house you went to last night? For a moment, I think Rory's going to grow a pair and demand some answers. But I don't break the smile or the stare. And in the end, he blinks. Yeah, that's her.
Mr. Fallon has identified a photo of Aisling Murray, I tell the tape.
Let's have a look.
Breslin leans across to pick up the photo. His eyebrows shoot up and he gives a long, low whistle.
Oh my, respect to you, my friend. She's a little corker.
That takes Rory's mind off his questions. He hits Breslin with a hot glare, which Breslin doesn't notice. He's still holding up the photo at arm's length, nodding away appreciatively.
She's beautiful. That isn't what I like about her.
Breslin throws him a disbelieving glance over the photo.
Uh-huh. You're there for her sparkling personality.
Yeah, I am. She's interesting. She's intelligent. She's warm. She's got a wonderful imagination. It's not about her looks. Physically, she's not even my normal type.
A snort explodes out of Breslin. Oh, please. She's everyone's type. Are you telling me you prefer them ugly? Given the choice, you would have gone for some fat, hairy troll with a face like a smashed donut. But somehow, you got stuck with this instead. My heart bleeds for you.
Rory flushes. No, I'm just saying I've never ended up with a girl who's so, well, so elegant. All my other girlfriends have been more the casual type.
Doesn't surprise me, Breslin says, eyeing Rory's shirt. So, how'd you pull this one? No offence, but let's face facts. You're punching well above your weight there. It doesn't bother you, does it? Me pointing that out.
No. I already said she's beautiful.
Rory is shifting in his chair, wanting Breslin to put the photo down. Breslin gives it another leer.
Oh, she's a stunner. Whereas you, well, there's nothing wrong with you, but you're not exactly Brad Pitt, are you?
I know that.
So how'd you manage this?
Breslin waves the photo.
We got talking at a book launch in the shop at the beginning of December. That's it.
Uh-huh.
Breslin gives him another skeptical once over.
What's your technique? Seriously, any tips you've got, I'd love to hear them.
Rory's getting ruffled, sitting up straighter, trying to stare Breslin out of it. I don't have a technique. I just talk to her. I never even considered that it might turn into anything. I know perfectly well that anyone would take one look at Aisling and one look at me and bet any amount of money against us ending up together. Because I thought the same thing. I only talked to her because she was off on her own in the children's section. And since it's my shop, I felt responsible for making sure everyone was having a good time.
And then, I say, you clicked.
I'm smiling at him, and it pulls an answering smile before he remembers. Yes, we really did. Or I thought we did.
What you talk about?
Books, mostly. Aisling was leafing through a collection of George MacDonald fairy tales. I loved that book when I was little, so I told her that, and she said she loved it too. We'd even had the same edition, and from there we both like magic realism, and we both like spin-offs, reworkings. Aisling loved Wide Sargasso Sea. I was telling her she had to read American Ghosts and Old World Wonders. And she told me how, when she was 14, she got so annoyed at the ending of Little Women that she actually rewrote it and had Joe marry Laurie. She glued the pages into her copy so that when she reread the book, she could pretend that was the real story. She was funny, talking about that, how furious she was with Louisa May Alcott, till she found a solution. We laughed a lot. Rory is smiling again, unconsciously. He's yapping away like I'm his best mate. I know me and Breslin are doing the business, and I know Rory's what-if head is throwing out scenarios where one stroppy answer lands him in a cell full of Oz extras. But still, by this time, he should be digging in his heels and asking for answers, not sitting there handing over big wads of whatever we ask for. The accommodating type, the floater said. But this goes beyond accommodating. The only ones who never push back are the ones who have something to hide. I want to look at Steve. The one-way glass stares back at me. So, you swapped phone numbers, I say. And then? We texted back and forth a bit, and then we went for a few drinks at the market bar, and we got on great again. It felt, I know this makes me sound like a teenager, but it felt like something incredible was happening. We couldn't stop talking. We couldn't stop laughing. We got there at 8, and we didn't leave till they threw us out. Sounds like the date everyone dreams about, I say. Rory's palms turn upward. That's what it felt like. Aisling, she was telling me she used to be plain. Well, that's the word she used. Plain. And now every time a guy tries to chat her up, all she can think is that he wouldn't have gone near her a few years ago. And she can't get past that. She can't respect someone like that. She said, with me, it felt different. She felt like I actually would have talked to her exactly the same way, even back then, which I would have. She sounded startled by it. More than startled, almost giddy. You see what I mean? We did click. It wasn't just me. That doesn't sound like the game-playing rules addict I've been picturing. Aisling's doing it again, getting blurrier with everything I find out about her. That, or she was feeding Rory bullshit, or Rory is feeding us bullshit. Breslin says, and at the end of the evening, I walked her to a taxi.
Come on, Rory. You know what I'm talking about. Did you get a little kiss on the way?
Rory's chin goes up.
How is that relevant?
He's going for dignified, but he hasn't got the oomph to pull it off.
Breslin snickers into his notebook.
Not even a snog, he says to me. You are calling this a dream date.
Rory bites.
We did kiss, all right.
Ah, Breslin says. Sweet. Just a kiss.
Yes, just a kiss.
Breslin grins. I say, and after that night, we kept texting. I invited her out for dinner. Like I said, it took a while to set it up, but we sorted it out in the end. We went to Pessel.
Very nice, Breslin says, nodding. Even I've heard of Pessel, although I want those brain cells back. Did you sell a kidney?
A sad flicker of smile from Rory. I thought Aisling would like it. I wasn't thinking about it being super trendy. I just chose it because it has an enclosed roof garden, so we could look out over the city and talk about, I don't know, all the people out there and what they might be. In hindsight, I misjudged completely. It must have seemed like I was doing the same thing as those other guys, judging her based on her looks.
Do you think?
His face turns to me, suddenly wide-eyed.
Do you think that's why she...
Not enough info to tell, I say.
Did she seem like she was enjoying the evening?
Yes. I mean, a shadow slips across Rory's face.
She did. She really did. But she seemed like there was something on her mind, too. Like she couldn't quite relax.
Every time things were going well, when we started having a good conversation or having a laugh, Aisling would get this worried look. And she'd turn quiet, and I'd have to pick up the conversation from scratch and get it moving again. That was when I started wondering if there was something she wasn't ready to tell me. Like a family situation or, Breslin says.
Maybe she was starting to realise that she wasn't actually that into you. And every time she saw you thinking things were going great guns, she got worried because as far as she was concerned, this was the date from hell. And she didn't know how to break it to you.
That gets to Rory. It wasn't the date from hell. I know I would say that. Breslin started to say something, but Rory raises his voice to force him down. He's getting ballsy. But I was there, and I'm not just fooling myself. Most of the time we were getting on great.
If you say so,
Breslin says, almost holding back the twitch at the corner of his mouth.
And at the end of that evening,
we kissed again. I assume that's what you're asking. The front legs of Breslin's chair come down with a bang.
You kissed? She didn't invite you home with her. You mortgage your organs to take her to Pessel, and all you get is a snog up against a lamppost like a fucking teenager. If that's your idea of a date going well, Rory snaps.
2 days later, she invited me over to her house for dinner. You can check my phone. I've got the text messages right on there. Would she have done that if it had been the date from hell?
Breslin's grinning, a wet, open grin like hunger. He's loving this.
I feel it too. We're getting good at Rory. We know how to work him now. He's all ours. We can bounce him up and down, fling him into fancy shapes, like our very own little yo-yo.
I don't want to bounce him too hard. Not yet.
I shoot Breslin a warning look and say,
and the dinner invitation was for last night?
Yeah. Rory's spine slumps. His little feisty moment is over. At first it was for last week, but Aisling had something come up, so we switched it to last night.
Breslin backs off a little, but not all the way. When we were talking about how you got to Aisling's place, you said, he flicks back through his notes, that you took the bus in case you had wine with dinner and you needed to get home afterwards, meaning you weren't sure whether you were going to be spending the night at her place or not. Is that right? Rory's starting to go pink again. I had no idea. That was why I didn't bring the car. I didn't want Aisling to think I was assuming she'd invite me to stay or that I was pressuring her to. I'm amazed this guy manages to get out of bed in the morning without working himself into a panic attack over the chance that he might trip on the bath mat and stab himself through the eye socket with his toothbrush and be left with a permanent twitch that'll ruin his chances of landing an aeroplane safely. If the pilot has a heart attack and doom hundreds to a fiery death. Normally this shit makes me roll my eyes, but here it's going to come in useful as soon as we're ready to start pushing. What if maybe crap is for weak people? It belongs to the ones who don't have the strength to make actual situations go their way, so they have to hide away in daydreams where they can play at controlling what comes next. And that makes them even weaker. Every what if is a gift to anyone who's looking for a hold on you. And that means us. If a guy's whole head is in reality, then reality is the only route we can take to get to him. If he's letting his mind prance off down dozens of twisty hypothetical fairy tales, every one of those is a crack we can use to prise him open. Breslin says, but you thought last night might be the night. I didn't have a clue. That's what I mean. Come on, Rory. Don't bullshit me. It's your third date, right? You'd blown the budget on her last time. She'd invited you over for a taste of her home cooking. Like any normal guy's going to be expecting. I wasn't expecting anything. The price of the restaurant has nothing to do with... Aisling is not a... Rory is fun when he's pissed off, like a fluffy little attack gerbil. Breslin raises his eyes to the ceiling. Okay, let's try this. Did you bring condoms? I don't see how that's... Rory, don't get coy now. We're all grown-ups here. When you knocked on Aisling's door last night, did you have a condom on you, yes or no? After a moment, Rory says... Yes, I had a pack in my coat pocket, just in case.
You've got your priorities straight, Breslin says, sitting back and smirking. You forgot the flowers, but the Johnnies, those you remembered.
You're showing your age, Breslin, I say smoothly, smirking right back at him. Your generation was weird about safe sex. My and Rory's lot, we don't go anywhere without a tree pack, just on the off chance. Breslin throws me a narky look that's only partly put on. I say, am I right, Rory? Still got them in your coat? If he's got them, that backs up the claim that this is the coat he was wearing last night. But Rory shakes his head. I took them out. When I got home and took off my coat, I felt them in the pocket, and I just, he's breathing fast. I felt like I should have known all along that this was never going to happen, just like you said. That's thrown at Breslin, who tilts his head in acknowledgement. Like the only possible reason Aisling could have been seeing me was to set me up for some awful candy camera thing. And while I was knocking and texting and ringing like an idiot, she'd been behind that door with all her friends, all of them splitting their sides laughing at the loser who genuinely thought he had a chance with her. The emotion is real. It's gripping his whole body, ready to lift him off the chair by the scruff of his neck and slam him against the wall. That doesn't make the story true. That blast of humiliation could have hit him when he says it did. Or it could have hit when he arrived early at Aisling's and she didn't give him the welcome he was expecting. Or it could have come weeks back when she told him she was seeing someone else. Or when they left Pestle and she didn't invite him home. And he decided to punish her. Rory is still going.
I threw the condom packet across the room. It made me feel ridiculous and disgusting and sleazy, and it's somewhere in my living room. I hope I never find it. I say matter of fact, but sympathetic. Cool girl is big on matter of fact sympathy. If she genuinely didn't bother answering the door, that was a shitty thing to do. Rory shrugs. He's folding over his hands again. That rant emptied him out. He even looks smaller. Maybe. I don't know what happened. Breslin moves. Rory glances up in time to catch the smirk. He flinches away from it. No, seriously, I say. You've got every right to be well pissed off. Rory says, I'm not even pissed off. I just wish I understood. He looks exhausted, suddenly. He takes off his glasses and pulls down the cuff of one sleeve to polish them. Now that he can't see me properly, he has an easier time looking at me. Bare and half blind, his eyes look clean as an animal's. Just so I can stop making up scenarios. That's all I did last night. I couldn't make my mind stop it. I think I got about 2 hours sleep, which would cover things nicely if anyone heard him moving around in the middle of the night or saw a light on. I just want to know. That's all. I say, why do you think we brought you in here? I don't know. Rory's spine tenses up. He can feel it. We're headed for the real stuff. Obviously something's happened, probably near Aisling's house, since you were asking me why, but I can't, there are too many, I mean, I'm hoping it's not, I say, and I don't make it gentle. Aisling's dead. It hits Rory like a strobe light to the face. He jerks back in his chair, hands spasming in front of him. His glasses go skittering halfway across the table. For a second there, I think he's having some kind of attack. He's the type who would carry around an inhaler. But he gets himself back. He grabs for his glasses and shoves them onto his nose. It takes him 3 clumsy tries, catching them when they fall off and fumbling to get them right way up, and trying not to smear the lenses. Then he presses his palms together, jams his fingers up against his mouth, and breathes hard into them, staring at nothing. Me and Breslin wait. Rory says into his fingers, how? When? Last night. Someone killed her. His body jerks.
Oh God, oh God, is that why? Was she, when I was knocking, was she, was the person still?
I say, now do you see why we needed to talk to you?
Yes, I, oh God.
Rory's eyes snap into focus, focused on me, and huge. The penny's dropped, or he's decided to play it that way.
You don't think, wait, no, do you think I, am I a suspect?
Breslin laughs, one cold note.
What? What? Why is that funny?
Listen to that, Breslin says to me. He's all about how much he cared about Aisling and her great personality, right up until we tell him the poor girl's dead. And just like that, it's all about him. Forget her.
I do care about her. I just, this wasn't...
Rory grabs for air. He looks like shit, white and ragged, staring wildly back and forth between us. I hope he brought his inhaler.
I thought a burglary maybe or an assault. I never...
His hands go to his head and he rubs the heels back and forth on his temples. He's breathing hard. It all looks right. Shock and grief are clumsy. They're ugly. They're not pretty tears and a dabbing hanky. But Rory's had all night to build himself an armour suit of what if and dress up in it. And because he's used to focusing on what could have happened, just as much as on what actually did, he could walk around in his made-up story like it's the true one.
The one place where his story cracked and peeled, around that half hour between him getting off the bus and him knocking on Aisling's door, there's something there. Everything else could play either way, innocent or guilty. That half hour, the half hour that matters, wasn't innocent. The shock could be real, and he could still be our guy. There's one obvious reason why he might have been expecting to hear about an assault instead of a murder. I say, why did you think there might have been a burglary or an assault?
Can I?
Rory's voice has gone thick. He swallows hard, but his chin is shaking.
Can I please have a minute by myself?
Breslin says.
What for?
Because I just found out.
He jerks his head like there are small things flying in his face.
I just need a minute.
You're doing grand, I say. We'll only be a little longer. Hang in there.
No, I can't. I need...
We're asking you to help us out here, Breslin says. Any reason why you have a problem with that?
I just need to clear my head. Do I have to stay? Am I allowed to leave?
Rory's voice is spinning higher and louder. Breslin's leaning back in his chair watching, with a curl to his lip.
Rory, pull yourself together.
But Rory is beyond reach of the snap of disgust. This is just routine. It's not personal. We'll be having this same conversation with every single person who had anything to do with Aisling. And I can guarantee you, the people who cared about her will want to do anything they can to help us.
You don't?
I do. I'm not under arrest, right? I can just go for a walk and then come back.
Not a total pushover after all. Fluffy little Rory is well able to push back when he really wants to. He's one nudge away from trying to walk out. If he goes for the door, I'm going to have to choose, let him go or arrest him. Neither of those sounds good.
Jesus, man, have you seen the weather? I say easily. It's lashing.
You'll get soaked. Plus, we'll lose this interview room. And then we'll all be hanging around for hours before we get another one. Rory stares at me, too disoriented to work out what he thinks about that. I tell you what, we'll give you a few minutes to yourself, okay? Just to get your breath. It's a lot to take in. There's a small, sharp movement from Breslin, but I don't look around. I give Rory a cool girl smile. Enough sympathy to warm it, but not enough to feel sticky. We'll have a cup of tea and come back to you, I say, scraping back my chair and standing up before he can come up with a decision.
Can I get you a cuppa while I'm at it?
No, thanks. All I want is...
Rory's voice splits open. He presses the back of one hand against his mouth. Breslin hasn't moved. Those pale eyes are on me. They say clear as a death grip on my wrist. Sit the fuck down, I say, without taking my eyes off Breslin's. We'll see you in a few, Rory. Hang in there. Then I turn around and go for the door. I leave it open behind me, but I don't look back. I'm halfway to the observation room before I hear the nasty, juddering scrape of Breslin pushing back his chair on the grimy linoleum. Steve's at the one-way glass, with his shirt sleeves rolled up and red hair sticking out in all directions. He's been putting a lot into watching us. I head over to see what Rory's doing with his alone time. On the way, my eyes hit Steve's, but only for a second that says later. Rory has his elbows on the table and his face in his hands. The jump of his shoulders claims he's crying. I can't see if there are actual tears.
Well, 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 Breslin says behind me, swinging the door shut with a bang. I thought that went pretty well for our first round. Nice work, Conway.
Patronizing fuck.
You didn't do a bad job yourself, I say.
I'm not sure that was the right call,
pulling out just when he's going to pieces. That's always a good moment to push for a confession.
Breslin loosens his collar with a finger and rolls back his shoulders.
But hey, we got to him once. We can do it again. Am I right?
Not a problem, I say.
So, what's the betting?
Breslin's head pops forward like he can't believe he heard me right.
Say what?
The suspect, detective. Guilty or not? I'm asking for your opinion.
Breslin's eyebrows are hitting his careful hairline.
Are you serious?
About wanting your opinion?
More or less.
Steve has wandered over to the water cooler and is filling a plastic cup, watching us.
Breslin lifts a hand. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's just stall the ball here. Are you saying you've got doubts?
I'm saying I'd like your opinion. If that's a problem, though, I can live without it.
I'm right back to wanting to throat punch the bollocks. The fine thread of alliance that built up between the two of us in the interview room lasted all of 30 seconds outside it.
Talk to me, Conway. Are you trying to be super careful, yeah? Make sure you've got all your bases covered. Is that what's going on?
It's not a bad technique. Make the other person explain herself. You've got her on the back foot right there. But this is what I mean about Breslin not being as smart as he thinks.
I just saw him use it on Rory. Plus, it should have occurred to him that, what with me being a detective, I might just know the same tricks he does.
I lean a shoulder against the one-way glass where I can keep one eye on Rory and stick my hands in my pockets.
Do you think we should be?
Breslin sighs.
Well, I guess we've got to face it. One of the last things your rep needs is a ding for jumping the gun. But the other last thing you need is a rep for being so indecisive that you let your guy walk rather than put your balls on the line. Are you getting me?
Steve says, doing mildly bewildered.
Hang on a sec. You're saying you defo think you did it, yeah?
Breslin sighs, exasperatedly, and runs his hands over what's left of his hair, carefully so he won't bother it.
Well, yeah, Moran, I kind of do. This guy was the victim's boyfriend, so that's strike one.
He was actually at the crime scene at the relevant time. He's not even trying to deny it, so that's strike two. He was wearing non-fibre gloves, same as our killer. Strike three. He was wearing a black wool overcoat. And we've got black wool fibres on the body, strike four. And he basically admits that he was getting impatient for his ride. After all the time and money he put into this girl. And she wasn't showing any signs of giving up the goods. That's a great big strike five.
I'm not a baseball aficionado, but I'm pretty sure it takes less than that to put a guy well and truly out.
Steve is sipping his water and nodding through Breslin's list.
I'd say it does all right, he says agreeably. His accent has got stronger.
I put on the Thicco Scanger act too now and then, but I do it for suspects, not for my own squad.
Sometimes Steve makes me want to puke.
I think I'll keep an open mind a little longer, but...
Breslin lets the exasperation go up a notch.
Open about what? There's nothing else here, Moran. There's our boy Fallon. There's a shitload of circumstantial evidence all pointing straight at him, and that's it. What are you being open-minded about? Aliens? The CIA?
Steve pulls his arse up onto the rickety table, getting comfortable for the chats. I leave him to it.
Here's the only thing, he says. How did the actual killing play out? What are you talking about? He punched her. She hit her head. She died. That's how it played out.
Steve thinks that over. Brow furrowed. It's slow on the uptake of scangers.
Why, but, he asks.
Breslin's head goes back and he bares his teeth at the ceiling, halfway between a smile and a grimace.
Morn, morn. Do I look like Poirot to you?
Huh? Not a lot.
No, because This isn't Saturday evening in front of the telly, with a nice cup of tea and a digestive biscuit. And so I don't care about motive. I don't, and neither should you. You ought to know that by now. Steve scratches at his nose. You're probably right, man. I'd say you are. It's just I'm not seeing it. I like being able to see things in me head. Know what I mean? Picture them like. He frames his hands in front of his eyes to make sure Breslin gets the concept of picturing something.